I have to be the person who pours this kind of love for all life into the world. Like, I have to be, there's this teaching in the Catholic Church that you get anointed during one of the sacraments, and the fragrance of the anointing is just, it's chrism oil. And so it's just beautiful. And it symbolizes you're supposed to give off the aroma of Christ. So, like, you shouldn't have to say anything. You know what I mean? Like, I should go about my life, and even though I curse too much, and, like, you know, there's a lot about me that's just a little bit, whatever, extra, I want to live my life in such a way that I don't, like, that people know that I love Jesus, but that I'm a safe place. And that those two things are hand in hand. Jesus is a safe place, and people will know that if I give off his aroma.
You're listening to Upside Down Podcast. This is Lindsay Wallace.
And I'm Kayla Craig.
I'm Patricia Taylor.
And I'm Alisa Molina. Upside Down Podcast is an ecumenical conversation at the intersection of justice, spirituality, and culture.
And we've created this space with you in mind.
So join us for unscripted conversations on God's upside down kingdom.
Welcome to season 5 of Upside Down Podcast. We are so excited that you're here. I am Kayla Craig, one of the founders of Upside Down Podcast, along with Lindsay Wallace. And we are thrilled that our very own Alisa Molina will be staying for this season. And if you're a patron or you follow us on the Instagrams, you already know the big news, which is our friend Patricia Taylor is joining us as the 4th co-host for this year. Say hi, Patty.
Hi. Woo!
So excited that you're here. Speaking of our amazing Patreon community, we are so grateful for the generous support of our patrons. We are, as you guys know, a 100% listener-funded podcast, which means you guys are the ones who help keep this podcast thriving. We are super excited to announce that this season we will be adding to the bonus content our patrons receive, including quarterly book studies and some super fun giveaways. So if you've wanted to get to where you're joining our community of patrons, now is the time to do it. You can find out more by going to patreon.com/upsidedownpodcast or visit upsidedownpodcast.com and click give in the upper left-hand corner.
Woo, we love our patrons, and Alisa has been working so hard on creating new content and cultivating community, and I'm excited to see what comes of it. So for those of you who are new listening or maybe forgot a little bit about why you started listening or what brought you to Upside Down in the first place, we kind of just wanted to jump back in after our kind of summer sabbatical and let you know about this podcast, what is different than maybe what you've heard on other podcasts, and kind of who we are. So Upside Down Podcast brings together women and sometimes a few good men for unscripted ecumenical conversations about God's upside down kingdom. We, your co-hosts, are 4 women from across the U.S., spanning age, denomination, race, culture, and background. And we care deeply about the love of God and neighbor. And on air, we explore the themes that we explore in our real lives, the themes of intersections of faith and justice, and what I like to say, a little bit of prophetic imagination. So we come together as completely learning, ordinary humans who are on this journey right alongside you. And we hope to model tough conversations so you, wherever you are, wherever you're listening, whoever you are, can also be inspired to continue to have these same conversations offline with your local community. So in a time in 2020 when we don't know what we're going to wake up to next and many Christians are deconstructing their faith, we hope to be a welcoming space where people can be curious, learn, connect, and grow into the beloved community. So before we begin on today's conversation, I thought it'd probably be helpful to know who you're hearing. So if you're a patron, you already got to know a little bit about Patty Taylor. But Patty, this is your first kind of entry into the gauntlet here at Upside Down. And I was wondering if you could give our listeners a little 2-minute rundown on kind of who you are, where you've been, and why you're here.
Oh, no pressure, no pressure. Okay. All right, here I go. yes, I'm really, really excited and thrilled to be here and just really glad that no one can see me sweating. but I'm Patricia Taylor. My friends call me Patty, and I am passionate about many, many, many things. But where I feel like my passion and my calling intersect is specifically in anti-racism education and advocacy. And so I was a blogger for several years, and then just over a year ago started a separate page just dedicated to racial justice and racial reconciliation. And so as a Black woman, I share openly and honestly about my experience of living in America as a Black woman. And so I just am so excited to be here. I know that while the four of us are all different and unique and have, you know, just differences that we bring to the table, we have a common thread that brings us all together. And that's what makes me feel so at home here with all of you ladies. And I'm just thrilled to be here.
Patty, we're so excited and thankful that you are here. And I know that the season is going to be great. So, Lindsay, you've been stuck with me for quite a while.
5 years. I know. I didn't want to interrupt your intro, but when you said season 5, I feel like that, like we need a minute to,
I know,
celebrate that, or yeah, something, recognize it. Yeah. So, like Kayla said, I've been around since the beginning of Upside Down podcast. It was her sort of wild and crazy idea. And I said, I will be one of your biggest cheerleaders. And then as conversations continued about what it might look like, I couldn't not be involved. So here I am, almost 5 years later. And Patty, did you say where you live, where you are in the world?
No, I did not. I am in Georgia. I'm actually from the Bay Area, California, but 5 years ago, I guess 5 is the number tonight, we moved to Columbus, Georgia, which is just south of Atlanta.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So I am in Louisville, Kentucky, and I think, you know, the question that I always ask people is like, what keeps you up at night? And what keeps me up at night is, how do we usher in a more livable planet for the most marginalized among us? And so that's sort of what I try to focus my energy on. And I live here with my husband and 5 kids. If you go back several seasons, you can find we talk about adoption. 3 of my kids were adopted. 2 are biological. And I think, yeah, I just really appreciate this space. And I think the reason that Kayla and I have chosen to continue it is we get messages from people who say that they feel like they don't know where they belong within the church. And they question if they do still have a place in the church, and they hear the conversations that we're having. And they feel like they have a place at the table. And so I just love that. And I think, you know, when I think about the margins and creating a more livable planet for people, there are folks who are hurting all over the place, and some of them are in the church and some of them have been locked outside for different reasons, but that definitely keeps me going and keeps me showing up to this space.
I love that. And Alisa, you decided to stick around too, and we're so glad that you're here. Why don't you give our listeners a little background into who you are and why you're here?
I'm so thankful to be asked back. That you guys are just such great community, really. And the addition of Patty has just been, you know, gearing up for this season on our private conversations has they've just given me so much hope and so much strength, really, because it's very, this group is just very centering and remembering like who we are and what we're about, even in really turbulent times. So I'm Alisa and I live right outside of Austin, Texas with my family. We have 5 kids and my husband's a teacher. My background is in education. I am very much a fan of education. I'm a fan of teachers. And so I think right now that's where I'm spending a lot of my energy and how I'm just looking at different systems and how they're set up. And I think like all of you, what keeps me up at night is just how I fit into the role of loving and serving my neighbor well, learning how to love and serve my neighbor better each day, having eyes to see and ears to hear, and a heart that really is bent on loving like Jesus. And so I've spent a lot of time just trying to get nearer to him and listen to his voice and create some stillness in my heart so that I can get up every day and be more like him. So yeah, I love being here and it's just a joy to hang out with you guys.
I love that. I guess that leaves me. I prefer to just ask you guys all the questions and sit back and kick my feet up. I have a background in journalism, which is probably where some of that comes into. So as you know, I can really drill you all with questions. But I'm Kayla Craig. I live smack dab in the middle of the United States, in the middle of Iowa in Des Moines. And I have 4 kids between the ages of 4 and 9. I'm a writer. I'm a podcast producer. I love how these conversations have grown and pushed me and evolved and changed and taken these twisty turns and brought in people that I never thought I would get to pick their brains. And yet here we are. And as we've been preparing for season 5, I am just thrilled. I'm just so excited with expectancy and anticipation of what is to come. So thank you guys all for being here all around the country. Technology can be so terrible, and yet it's bringing us all together. So as we kind of look ahead to season 5, I was thinking about how we kind of prayed and listened and wrestled and scrolled Twitter and got really angry at Facebook and spent too much time on Instagram.
Is that all just correct? All that is very good. Can you put that on a coffee cup? That's exactly what we did.
And all of that kind of converged in this idea to completely strip down our theme for season 5 into asking, what are the necessities? What are kind of those core things that we need that are fueling us, that are propelling us to live in this kind of upside down now and not yet kingdom? So each episode that we are going to go through for season 5 is going to go through one of the needs that we have found in each of our lives of spirituality, justice, culture, and community. And we kind of hope to model, and what I hope to be and what I know from you all already is authentic conversation among friends. And sometimes we'll invite leaders to join us, and sometimes it'll just be kind of the 4 of us. So we're planning a mix like we always do of collaborative table discussions and then more intimate conversations with Christian leaders from our variety of backgrounds and theologies and passions to kind of speak on the topics that they're leading in, which is kind of the way we've always done it. And it's been really fruitful. So I'm really, really excited for season 5. And yeah, just thankful for our listeners and our community that keeps this whole thing happening, because we couldn't do it without them.
Yeah. And as we thought about what's necessary right now, what rose to the top of our conversations is life. And to someone from the future who might be listening to this in the year 2050, that might sound oddly simplistic, but in September of 2020, it is anything but. Since the beginning of the year, nearly 200,000 lives have been lost in the United States to COVID-19, and we find ourselves not only in the midst of a virus pandemic, but also an uprising for racial justice ignited by the murders of Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, George Floyd, and over 700 image bearers who have been killed by the police this year. There continue to be children in cages at the U.S.-Mexico border, and states are again having conversations about who will feed children if they're not in school. So if Jesus came so that we can have life in abundance, or as the message says, more and better life than they ever dreamed of, we're asking today, what does it look like to champion that life in 2020? How does our thinking of being pro-life need to evolve to meet Jesus's intentions and our current moment?
Whew. Well,
the shallow end to get us started, you know.
I know. You know.
Yeah. Just some light.
Welcome. Let's start off light is what we decided.
And I think the evolution, Elisa, you can sort of, you have a story that can guide us through an evolution of what it looks like to champion life, I think.
I just think, you know, in 2020, I think the thing I'm most grateful for in my heart is that my heart has widened. You know, sometimes I have found in different circles that I've been in that there has been like a narrowing of whose dignity is worth protecting or whose life is worth us standing for. And there's almost also been like tears, you know, like your life is worth more because of this, or you're worth more because of that. And I think that in 2020, in my own heart and in my own self, I've learned how to push back on the idea that I cannot be about the dignity of everyone. And so what that has looked like in my life is I used to have a very kind of tunnel vision view of what it meant to be pro-life. I actually don't even love that label. Anyway, I'm not a super fan of many labels, but that's just one I've kind of just shed. And it is because at least in 2020, I feel like that label is very, very kind of connected with just one sort of protection of dignity versus just a wider view. And so just over the years, I've just realized that I don't think God is asking me to, and I don't think Jesus modeled something where everyone wasn't beloved. You know, everyone wasn't an image bearer, and everyone wasn't worth me, you know, at whatever point they are suffering, for me to stand and be like, no, but you're an image bearer and I love you. I have decided that that's just, nobody is allowed to kind of push me into a corner of you, this is where you get to be pro-life. And so that's just, it's freeing, honestly, in 2020. It's freeing.
So you kind of point or touched on this, the term pro-life, and that, you know, you don't super love it. And I even wonder, like, is the term pro-life dead? Like, has it lost the meaning that it might have had previously, in the sense of people used it to communicate that they were about life? Whereas today, I think of it as people who are just anti-abortion, not necessarily that they are pro-dignity of the whole human.
Right. And I honestly think that in 2016, that's what happened. It was kind of like a watershed moment, because here I was thinking this whole time that I thought pro-life meant we really stood for the dignity of everyone. And when I looked around for the leaders of various movements that I had really aligned myself with, I realized, oh, wait, no. What I thought we were all about is not what we're all about. Mm-hmm. And so I really had to kind of shed some circles I ran with or in and supported, and then just look for others. I knew that there were some people out there that really did want a life abundant for everyone. And I found them. Upside Down is one of those places.
Yeah. What I think I hear you saying is we don't have to choose, and that you don't feel like Jesus was choosing, and that's not what was modeled for us. Like, we can be about all life. And I wonder, for all of us, what does it look like to be about life in 2020 in the midst of a pandemic and police terrorization and ICE descending on people's workplaces? What does it look like for us to be about life right now?
I mean, the first word that comes to my mind. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think you have some thoughts on this.
I know. You were reading my mind. I was like, ooh. I mean, gosh, I do have thoughts on this. Showing compassion, having empathy. You don't have to be an expert on all the things to care about something and someone when they're hurting. And I think it's hard to say that you value life and that you uphold someone's dignity if you don't care about them when they're in pain, if you don't care about what they're going through. It doesn't have to be your story, but to be able to step into someone else's shoes or to be willing to stand beside them, like, that's really like where I find myself today specifically. I posted something today that said, if you can't grieve with me, don't fool yourself into thinking you love me. Because we are in the midst of a week where there's been another shooting of an unarmed Black man. He was shot 7 times in the back, Jacob Blake, and he's in the hospital right now, handcuffed, paralyzed, and there have been protests breaking out where this happened in Wisconsin, in Kenosha, Wisconsin. And as usual, it's the same rhetoric every time this happens. Well, what did he do? Did he just comply? Well, what about Black on Black crime? Well, what about this? Well, what about this? Well, what about this? Well, but. And meanwhile, we have a 17-year-old white supremacist who murdered 2 people at one of these rallies last night. And people, some individuals in our sphere are hailing him as some kind of hero, some kind of crowd control hero. And I'm sitting here thinking, you've got to be kidding me. Like, you've got to be kidding me. Even the chief of police, he stated in a statement, and I'm going to pull it up so I can read it exactly. And he said, last night in a situation that began peaceful and turned somewhat unruly, persons who were out after the curfew became engaged in some type of disturbance and persons were shot. This is Police Chief Daniel Moschini's. Had persons not been out involved in violation of that, perhaps the situation that unfolded would not have happened. So basically you have the chief of police in Kenosha City saying if the victims hadn't been out past curfew, they would have been alive today instead of one of them being shot in the head. Like, how can we say that we care about people and we can't even grieve over people dying? It doesn't matter if you like that person, if you agreed with what they aligned with. They are an image bearer. They were an image bearer. They have value to God. They matter, and they should matter to us. And so it's just really, really difficult for me to, you know, to even use or hear the refrain of being pro-life, because I just feel like it's empty words. You know, you're pro-life for who? For whom? Who really matters to you? So that's a little bit.
That's good.
Yeah.
It's almost as if to care about someone else's life means that we have to look beyond ourselves. And I think pre-pandemic, we were really terrible as a whole. I mean, our lives were just so filled up with distractions and with convenience and comfort. You know, I think to even care about somebody else's life, we have to stop for a moment and lay down our own life. And more I'm thinking that laying down our own life doesn't necessarily mean like being willing to die, but can we just pause? I mean, can we just pause? The man was shot 7 times in the back. Just the idea of stopping our life and really looking at another image bearer's life for me. I don't think it's too much to ask.
And I can't know the motive, of course, of everybody, but I do feel like there's a cost that a lot of people associate with. What am I having to give up? What am I losing if I'm stepping out and caring yes. about someone else deeply? And the truth is really nothing. You have everything to gain.
I mean, even on a, I don't know, I've been really shocked by people's responses to mask mandates. Mm-hmm. In thinking about protecting the lives of folks who might be immunocompromised or the elderly, or like, it's not about you, to your point, Alyssa. Right. Like,
yeah,
it's not about you. Like, okay, you're healthy. You don't think it's real, whatever. Okay, fine. But do you care about others? And it's just been shocking and disheartening to see how many people don't. And I don't know if you guys have a sense of, I don't know. I just struggle with like, why? Like, why are we so just married isn't even the right word. It's much more unhealthy than that. But like, why are we so entangled with our individualism? Why are we so wrapped up in me and my rights and I can do what I want because I have the right to do so? Like, I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that.
I have some thoughts.
Let's go, Kayla.
Okay.
Get them.
We have bought the lie, hook, line, and sinker, that partisanship and talking points and being right is more important than the cross. That is the truth. We have conflated the gospel for a religion that puts self above Jesus. And it is hurting all of us. It is hurting ourselves when we mm-hmm. think that mm-hmm. we are prioritizing ourselves. We're the ones who are getting hurt, and we're bringing everybody else down too. And that goes to everything that we're talking about here. And it's convicting. Like, I am continually convicted. I go to bed crying because I see time and time and time again that people do not care about my disabled daughter. They don't care if we might never leave our house again during a pandemic, that it keeps going on and on and on because they're not willing to wear a mask. They don't care that I have to have a conversation with my Black son about police officers. They don't care. But what is convicting to me is, I see this is my family, but what are the things that I'm not paying attention to because it doesn't relate to my family? And asking God to speak into those spots, and it is convicting, and it is like really easy for me to be like, well, you've done this wrong. And something I always have to come back to is like, I've gotten it wrong too. I'm going to get it wrong too. But where can I be rooted in? And I feel like I told my husband, Johnny, I was like, threw down my Bible. And I was like, I can't even read this anymore because I'm getting so fired up about it. Because if we read the Old Testament, if we read the New Testament, we can read the prophets of the Old Testament. We can read Jesus's words and life and ministry in the New Testament. It's all there. Like, we have this, and we keep messing up. But I think we have to be rooted. For me, I have to be rooted in the love of Christ. And that helps me in my empathy, even for the people that I'm like, how? What? Why? Who? And you know what I mean? That doesn't mean mm-hmm. that I'm like letting them hold power over me or letting them, you know, getting dragged out into Facebook fights or whatever. That's not what I'm saying, but it allows me to see even this person that I disagree with, and I'm going like all around town with this, like, I've gone down rabbit holes now, so Lindsay, bring us back to whatever we were talking about at first. but it reminds me that everybody has a story, right? And and I don't know that story, and so that yeah. sitting with that can be yeah. pretty powerful.
Yeah. I think yeah. that's helpful. I mean, it kind of leads into another question that I have for you guys, which is in that John 15, that Jesus has come that we can have more and better life than we ever imagined. He's actually talking to the Pharisees, and he goes on to say twice that he lays down his life for his followers. And then he says, but the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy. And I mean, Kayla, you said the individualism and that we have gotten it all wrong and that we are more concerned about our rights than the cross. And so I don't know. I just wonder, like, what happens to the message and witness of Jesus when those who claim to follow God are actually the ones who are stealing and killing and destroying life, when we are unwilling to lay down our life and our liberties or our rights? Like, what does that do to the message and witness of Jesus? And then what does it mean for us as we are trying to work for a more and better life than we dreamed of, than our neighbors dreamed of? What does that mean for the church, I guess, is my question.
I think there has to be a clear separation between gospel living and online activism and online participation, I guess, because I do feel like when I see the three of you and what you're doing in your own communities, right, like day in and day out and in your own families, right, like it's a trudge, but we're trying, right? And we keep coming back to the hope that God is faithful and God is good and he is who he says he is. And if we're really passionate and aligned with that truth, if we really are trying to live that truth, then it's happening just ever so slightly underneath this big loud veil of like what gets all the, you know, lately because of the election, I've been trying to really consume a lot of news and it's just like, I can't make heads or tails of it. It's just like a train wreck. And so I, as much news as I consume, I try to read scripture even more. And every time I return to scripture, he is who he says he is. And I really feel like the people who really do love image bearers and are trying, even if it's, you know, we fall down, I feel like those folks are out there. I do. And I feel, I don't know. I just feel like sometimes my despair comes from what I think is the main story out there, but that isn't the main story. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah, it does
make sense. I think that it's hard though, because like I hold this tension of knowing that God does not need us to defend the word, you know, like God does not need us to come to, you know, we're coming to your rescue, God, because like we just continue, just like you said, Elisa, to live it, to, you know, to read it, to be, you know, Christ followers as we believe the gospel intended us to be. And what we see is definitely not the full picture. In that though, it's difficult for me to not focus on the brokenness, because I know that what we see, there are those who don't follow Jesus and they're seeing that as well. And to know people in my family who are like, I think you're great, but I can't get with this message because look at all these people who voted for this somebody and they say they're Christians, you know, or look at all these people who are persecuting, you know, these individuals and they say that they follow the same God that you follow. So I think that it's, we would be in despair forever, you know, if we gave into the narrative that we see out in the world presented so clearly and so loudly. But we also have to understand that it is a great responsibility. And how are we bearing witness? It matters, because the word is being diluted. It's being twisted. It's not the first time it's happened in history. It won't be the last time until Jesus comes back. But it doesn't mean that, and I know that's not what you were saying, Lisa, but I'm saying for me, it doesn't mean that we stop doing all that we can to put out a different message. And that's kind of what I carry.
Absolutely. Because every single time I see something ignorant, I'm like, oh my gosh, rolling up my sleeves. Yeah. Like, okay, this person clearly needs some direction. And then I'm like, okay, no, what can I go do that adds some mercy in the world? Because this, you know, I have to be the person who
pours this kind of love for all life into the world. Like I have to be, there's this teaching in the Catholic Church that you get anointed during one of the sacraments, and the fragrance of the anointing is just, it's chrism oil. And so it's just beautiful. And it symbolizes you're supposed to give off the aroma of Christ. So like you shouldn't have to say anything. You know what I mean? Like I should go about my life. And even though I curse too much and like, you know, there's a lot about me that's just a little bit, whatever, extra. I want to live my life in such a way that I don't like that people know that I love Jesus, but that I'm a safe place, and that those two things are hand in hand. Jesus is a safe place, and people will know that if I give off his aroma, not if I bang them over their heads with this Bible that, you know,
I think it.
I gotta do me.
Yeah. It goes back to what you were saying, Kayla, earlier in the conversation. It doesn't do any good to just be pointing the finger of like, I can't believe you're out here without masks on, or like, why do I have to scream at the top of my lungs, Black Lives Matter? And you're still arguing with me if we're doing all of that, but we're not looking internally, if we're not looking inwardly. And so, yeah, that's really a beautiful image that I'm going to hold on to, Elisa. Just, am I carrying that fragrance with me and what I'm sharing and what I'm saying and what I'm doing?
I think a lot of it also has to do with control. Like the other day I was really thinking about Pharaoh and how like the plagues were straight up like left and right, and homie was still like, nah, we're good. Like, you know, and I think that Pharaoh was in a position of power. And so his whole entire life had been built around him creating his own reality. Like his life was the way it was because he willed it that way. And I think that that is something that I'm looking around and I'm like, a lot of us, and I'm sure I'm guilty of this in plenty of ways, that I have lorded over my life as though I can control my own reality. And when that starts to like crumble, or people start to realize, oh, I'm actually not entirely in charge of my life, and things start to look, you know, different, I think people really, really struggle and they grasp. And I mean, I think that's the human condition, but I think that if you get into the process or I think that if you make it your life about laying down your life, then that just, it becomes easy. Like sacrifice becomes easier. And people who are parents know this, right? Like when you first have a kid, you're like, I will never sleep again. I can't do this. Like I literally cannot. And you just learn to lay down your life for this other human being. And by the time you know, like me, I have one that's just about to be 16 years old. Like all of those sacrifices for his life have come back to me like 100-fold in joys and in blessings. You know what I mean? And so I think it's just a discipline. That's the word I'm looking for. It's a discipline of laying down your life for others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that you pointed out the joy aspect, because I think like Kayla was saying earlier, we've traded something that is grossly distant from the model of Jesus and from the cross. Like we've traded that, and we don't even realize that we're missing out on this incredible joy that does come. And what I was thinking of, just kind of in response to that question for me, is I sort of have a, I don't know if motto is the right word, but I think often about like sometimes the truth needs to be said, not because someone else is going to believe you, but just because it's the truth. Like sometimes you just say it because it's true. Mm-hmm. But also staying close to the margins and close to the people that Jesus said that he could be found among, and the people he was found among. That for me, like you were saying, Elisa, in terms of like the main story or the big story, the news story, isn't always the real story. Like people who are on the margins, people who are in the streets, they tell me their real story. Like that's where I want to get my real story from. And so staying close to them just allows me to keep going and gives me that joy that you're talking about, that when you make sacrifices for people, or even just are in relationship with people who have been othered. I don't know. I feel a lot of sadness for those who have exchanged the cross for that rugged individualism, because they're missing out on so much.
And where you feel sadness, I am like in major prayer right now about like, Jesus, please help me not to other the ones that have done the othering, you know, like, yeah, it's really hard for me not to be angry with people who just continue to go about their lives like a black man did not get shot 7 times in his back, you know, like there aren't kids that are being stripped from their, like, I, and so, you know, I, you know, today Jesus said to me in prayer, he was like, listen, when I got onto the Pharisees, it was because of their piety, you know, their feigned piety. So what, you know, watch it when you think that you've got it all, like you are holy, holy, holy girl, like bring it down a notch, you know? And so if I struggle with, because I try to spend a lot of time at least learning and growing and finding community to be in and never forgetting, that it flips, the coin flips real fast, or the switch flips real fast, and I get real blamey and real angry, like real fast.
Yeah. I was just going to say, as I'm thinking about this and processing, and this is like, we're in the trenches of it and we're hearing all of these things. And if you're a Christian, you will do this. And I can't imagine how you would vote if you don't, you know what I mean? Like, we're getting all of these things shouted at us and all of these labels, kind of like we were talking about before. And I just think, I think about this so often. It's like, there's A and B, but what about if God's kingdom is not even the alphabet altogether? You know, what about if it's just not even in the same dichotomy? And that gives us freedom, you know, for those of us who are, you know, voting, like that gives us a freedom to not, we don't, you know, there's a lot of memes and stuff going around that talk about this, but our partisanship does not need to determine how we honor life. Like I just keep thinking, I want to do no harm. That, you know, that's what physicians say when they take the oath to become a doctor, do no harm. I want to do no harm, and I want to honor the image of God in all people. And like, why not? Well, what is holding us back from that? I just keep thinking, I don't know, these are like works in process, right? But I think that these are the questions we have to keep asking ourselves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which brings me to my next question, which is, as we approach the presidential election, what does it mean to vote for a pro-life candidate or a pro-life president?
I just, like, I don't know. I don't even know what that means anymore. Again, you know, what Kayla says really, you know, strikes a chord. Like, the thing about being a Christian is that the answer is not A or B. It isn't. Like, the entirety of who God loves is everybody. And so our human systems are going to fail every single time. In that regard. And so I think it's really dangerous and really treacherous for anyone to say this human being encompasses everything that Christianity encompasses. Like, that's just never true. That's never true.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think for me, like, I agree completely with what the two of you just said. And I was thinking about this earlier. Like, I can't even say that for myself. Like, that I am always like, I'm always working for, I mean, I'm intentionally trying to, but like I'm failing all the time, right? Like mm-hmm. I'm sure I bought something on Amazon this week that was made in a sweatshop. Like that is not about a more and better life, right? Like I'm sure I did that. So like for those of us who claim to be Christians and who are saying like, I want to be about life, like I can't even say for myself that I'm nailing it. So I can't imagine ever claiming this human being who's running for president is a pro-life, you know, in the way that we're talking about it, candidate. And therefore I'm going to vote for them based on that and that alone. Like no one is all the time able to do that.
Right. And even on the flip side, right? Yeah, absolutely. So on the flip side, if we were to have somebody who was, let's say, pro-life when it comes to Black Lives Mattering and systemic racism, right? Like, is that candidate going to be fully about all the other lives, Indigenous lives and pre-born lives and, you know, the very, very poor that are working in sweatshops? And there, it's just, it's too vast. It is too vast a thing where there are so many who are not valued and are, and their dignity mm-hmm. has been stripped in 2020, still with Christianity, all the denominations being massive. And I think at the end of the day, I think honestly, that is what's crushing me right now, is something Latasha said last season when she said the church has never been on the right side of history. It rings in my ears all the time on any number of things, because I'm just like, come on, church. Like, you literally have a model, you literally have a book, instruction guides here. Mm-hmm. Here they are. And mm-hmm. we're terrible at it. Like, what is going on here? We're the ones that are supposed to lead in all of these different areas. And why we're arguing with each other on all these different areas makes no sense to me. Like, zero sense.
Yeah. And I think that there's, you know, what's concerning for me when it comes to like the election specifically is idolatry and how we, and again, you know, just like you said, Lindsay, like all of us have things we need to check, you know, and I have to check myself for what I may be idolizing. But the idolatry that any human, any man could just, or woman, person, individual could encompass all the things. And mm-hmm. it's like you're bringing, you're exalting and lifting that individual up to Jesus. And then you're bringing Jesus down to this like level of presidency. And he supersedes all of that. Like he cannot be contained by that. And so that's like a part that's, it's really a challenge for me to see that growing and that really loud divide that seems to be, if you're on this side, like this is what it means to vote as a follower of Christ, you know, and this, mm-hmm. if you're on this side, this is what it means to vote as a follower of Christ. And we absolutely cannot align with that person because of that thing that they said, or maybe we won't even vote at all because, you know, nobody on this ticket has this sparkling resume. And I'm like, okay, but no one is Jesus. That's why. So you're, you know,
we're like, always going to fall short.
You're putting so much like emphasis into a person to be perfect or somehow be the savior when we have a savior. It's not the president, it's Jesus Christ. And so I absolutely believe that we need to be engaged in what's happening in our world around us, in our local communities, on the national level, and all the things as much as possible, even when we fall short, even when we're still giving into the very system that we are working so hard and trying so hard to fight against. But there's just a real danger for trying to just lift up and exalt the position of presidency to some kind of biblical thing and, you know, compare it to, you know, the president sitting at the right hand of the Father. Like, that's just not reality.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, I think we could obviously talk about this for a long time, but I want to ask one more question to sort of wrap up. And that is, what are some of the practical ways that we can, or maybe that you are, honoring life in your community on the ground?
Wearing a mask. honestly, considering my neighbors, wearing a mask. That's how I am doing one small thing when I am out and about. Yeah, I'm going to think on that for a minute.
I've gotten a lot of bit careful on where I donate money. You know, I think I've been a lot more intentional, groups that are helping, you know, in the standard definition or the usual definition of pro-life, you know, I've gotten a lot more, careful about when a group says that they are defending the dignity of life. If I'm going to contribute, like, I'm going to make sure that they're doing a good job, like, holistically doing that work. So,
Yeah, I echo both of those things. Those are really, really important to me too.
I think for me, even to get like hyper local as far as community goes, I've been thinking about, as my kids get older, especially, how to honor who God has created them to be. Like, my oldest two sons are 12, and so we're entering into that, like, individualization stage where they're, you know, starting to separate from us and figure out who they are and all of that. And so the temptation to, like, want them to fit into the mold is really strong. And so just to honor, like, who they were authentically created to be. Because I think, one, I want that for my kids. But also, I think there's a connection between how we view our own lives and our own selves in terms of our self-worth and our connection to the Creator, and the way that we treat others who are also made by that same Creator. And so I want to raise kids who authentically, who feel comfortable in their, as their authentic selves, and who feel connected to God, and that then that flows out of them to their communities. That's just something I've been thinking about lately, especially since we're stuck at home together all the time.
But that's really beautiful. I mean, that's a really beautiful way to approach it, because you're right. Like, you know, love people, I think. Yes. So,
yeah. And loving yourself is the first step. Absolutely. You know?
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much for this awesome conversation. I enjoyed it. And for our listeners, as you know, the podcast market is growing, which is awesome, but also that means it's hard for new listeners to find us at Upside Down Podcast. So one of the things that you can do to support the show is go to Apple Podcasts and leave a starred rating and a quick written review. It will only take you a minute. And we are just really grateful to those of you who have done that already. It's fun to read those and get your feedback and to see the ways that we can support you better. You can learn more about us at upsidedownpodcast.com or Upside Down Podcast on Instagram. That's where we hang out the most. You are always welcome to join the Upside Down Together listener group on Facebook, where we process through these episodes with the lens of God's upside down kingdom. And we will be back in just a couple of weeks with another episode for season 5 on the necessities right now. So thanks for listening.
Upside Down Podcast is created and hosted by Kayla Craig, Lindsay Wallace, Alisa Molina, and Patricia Taylor. Episodes are edited by Tess Malone and Johnny Craig. Show notes are by Lana Smith. Learn more at upsidedownpodcast.com. Thanks for listening.